You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 10th, 2017. This is Peter Soretta, and on today's show, we're going to be taking a look at Thor Ragnarok early reviews. We're going to be taking a look at the title for Bill & Ted 3, Rick and Morty, an expanded Pacific Rim universe, the Fast and Furious feud, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Sylvester Stallone story, and the firing of Harvey Weinstein. And in the water cooler, we're going to be talking about a bunch of movies I saw over the weekend, Ben's trip to Kansas City, and Brad's cookie butter Oreos review. Joining me on today's podcast are Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Bradford Oman.
Hey!
So, Brad, do anything exciting over the weekend?
No. I've done nothing exciting ever since I started student teaching. Student teaching has been dominating my life, but I did want to tell you guys about cookie butter Oreos.
Okay,
they are the latest flavor to come from Nabisco's crazy flavor people at Oreo.
By the way, I want to preface this that this is not a sponsored commercial of any kind.
No, not at all. This is me doing what I do and being obsessed with trying every new Oreo flavor that comes out. And there's at least one every month now, if not two. Just the last previous one was apple pie Oreos, which also not bad. But yeah, the new cookie butter ones I just found in stores, and they're pretty tasty. They taste, you know, they taste like cookie butter. And it's not the standard chocolate Oreo. It's like the golden style Oreos to go along with it. That mixes it up a little bit, so it's not like the chocolate Oreo with the cookie butter cream. But yeah, they're pretty good if you can find them at your store. I think they're all over the place now. And apparently, a friend of mine just texted me that he found a new release that they're mystery Oreos, like they don't tell you what the flavor is. He just found them in stores, and I haven't seen them yet, but I'm going to be on the lookout for them to see if I can find out and figure out what the flavor is.
Oh my god, that's been something I've wanted for so long. Actually, what I've wanted is I wanted a mystery pack where it just like has three, like it just like combines all the mystery Oreos into like one pack and you don't know what is what.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting.
Kind of like, a box of chocolates where it has like all the different kinds of chocolates. But
yeah, it also speaks to just how gluttonous we are and that we don't really care what we're going to eat, but we'll put it in our mouth anyway.
So
I don't know what this tastes like, but I'm going to eat it.
So, Brad, how is school? How is school life going?
It's going pretty well. You know, I won't get into any specifics for, you know, just legal purposes and all that jazz, but it's going pretty well. I have English classes and a journalism class, and I oversee publications for newspaper and yearbook. So yeah, it's going pretty well. Today I actually told my English classes, I have three of them, they're all senior level, my job outside of doing this student teaching thing and trying to get my teaching license, and now they legitimately think I'm like this famous person. like every single class at, when I first introduced them to the idea that like I write online and I have a pseudonym and I showed them some pictures of people I've met and like my quotes on posters and trailers and stuff, they were like shocked. They were like, what? They were like, why didn't you tell us this before? and it's like this is crazy. Like they were all shocked and impressed, and like, and I have a couple of the kids from my English classes that are in the pubs class, and they like went out of their way to tell the publications kids. They were like he's famous. And I'm like, oh, no, believe me, I'm not famous by any means whatsoever. It's so funny.
I think when you're a kid, you assume that teachers are only there because they failed at what they wanted to do, and not that they're capable of, you know, being in the profession that they're actually teaching, which you find out in college is a thing that happens.
I think that's part of it, but I also think another part of it is they just don't think that their teachers do anything cool outside of school. Like, this is their life. They come in, they teach, and they don't do anything else.
Yeah.
Ben, what have you been up to?
So I am currently coming to you guys from Kansas City, Missouri. I'm in a hotel room right now. I'm here because my wife is here for a work convention, and I figured, hey, I might as well just work from the hotel room and come to Kansas City to eat their incredible barbecue, because they have amazing barbecue in this city. Peter, you probably know this, but in Los Angeles, the barbecue is, I mean, I can't even think of a word that describes the barbecue scene in LA. It's so terrible. It's just like, it's practically non-existent.
Well, have you had Bledsoe's? I like Bledsoe's.
Yeah, Bledsoe's is pretty good, but it's not, I mean, like, I grew up in the South where you could find barbecue on every corner, and it's just not the same thing. You have to drive really far to get to one or two good, you know, decent barbecue places in LA. But here, there is an embarrassment of riches when it comes to barbecue. So that's really the main reason. I mean, you know, of course, spending time with my wife and hanging out with her and stuff is great. But I mean, this is like one of the highlights of my year in terms of eating food, because this barbecue, especially at this place called Joe's Kansas City, is like next level incredible. So if you're in that area and you ever have a free meal to you know, time to go grab a free meal or something, that is the place to go for sure. I also went to this place called Q39 that is really amazing, but Joe's is like, I mean, Anthony Bourdain says it's like one of the places that you have to eat before you die. It's won all sorts of nationwide competitions, and it's smoky and, you know, fall off the bone great, and man, it's glorious.
I am so
jealous. I
didn't know
Kansas City was known for barbecue, but now it makes me want to go there and have some.
Yeah, you should definitely do it.
Yes, very jealous. Over the weekend, I saw a bunch of movies, guys. I sat at home and watched on HBO. They came out with the new Spielberg documentary. Did either of you get a chance to see that yet?
No, I recorded it, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's like
same. I recorded it and for when I get back home.
It's 2.5 hours. It's very enjoyable. I would recommend it. I would say it's a must watch for anybody listening to this show. But I kind of feel like 2.5 hours is not enough to go over the career of, you know, one of the biggest directors of all time. And you kind of feel while you're watching this, and there are some great moments in it. It does a great job at kind of showing you how Spielberg as a person has put himself into all his films throughout his career, even the most populous films. You know, and I mean, obviously, like, we all know, you know, he grew up in a home that, you know, divorced parents and such. And there's some of that, but there's other stuff that I didn't really know about and didn't notice. And there's great behind-the-scenes stories. I just wish that HBO had made this into a miniseries. This could have been like a week-long miniseries, you know, with each episode going through, you know, what, 5-8 years of his career. And even then, I think it would have felt, you know, heavily condensed. But it is very enjoyable. I recommend it. Another thing I saw is I finally went to the theater and saw Blade Runner 2049. I had tickets to IMAX. I went with two of my friends to Burbank to go see that. And when I stepped into the door of the AMC theater, they told us that the hard drive with the film, that the audio was corrupted and that there was a heavy echo on the film. They're like, you could still watch it if you want. And we were like, no.
Yeah, why would they keep that as an option? That's so weird.
I don't know. I don't think I'm so surprised. I wouldn't think the IMAX would want that to happen. But whatever.
I would love to have heard what the sound would have been like with that echo on, because there's some pretty loud soundtrack parts, like long extended like techno notes, and I would have loved to have heard what that would have been like with like echo on.
I have no idea. Luckily, there is a AMC Prime Theater or screen in that same cinema. We got to get tickets, like crappy seats, but I mean, any seat in that theater is pretty good, and got to see the movie. I gotta admit, I'm not a person that has Blade Runner on their top films of all time. It's been a film that I've loved visually, and I love the ideas and the theme, but as a film, it kind of always felt long-ish and hard to watch. And I know that a lot of people out there are probably getting angry right now that I'm saying that. So I was actually kind of hesitant, but as much as I was excited for Blade Runner, I was kind of worried that I wouldn't like it. And guys, I loved it. Like, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. It does capture the speed and tone and atmosphere of the original, but I don't know. It just grabbed me more than the original in many ways. The soundtrack is, just the sound design as a whole is amazing. And I like some of the ideas that it's playing with. I'm not sure if we need another sequel to follow this, but I really enjoyed it. Did either of you see this film?
Yes, I saw it last night, and I'm still thinking about it. I don't really even know how. I mean, I liked it on a visual aesthetic level, and like you're saying, the sound is incredible. My theater was like physically shaking with the, you know, some of those super booming deep bass notes. I have not heard a theater shake like that probably since like Dunkirk or something, where it's just been the sound design is so insane. But I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of there's a lot of movie there to take in. So I still need to think about it before I sort of make my full final judgments. But yeah, it's a hell of a movie for sure.
Yeah, I also haven't come to the determination of whether I love it. I definitely like it, and it's. I think I need to see it a second time to really dig deeper into it. It's obviously it's very cerebral, and there's so much to soak in. But yeah, visually it was stunning. I love the soundtrack, and I love how it builds on not only the mysteries but the themes of the original as well, with some really interesting characters. Like I think that the hologram girl that Ana de Armas plays is a great extension of, you know, the struggles that Harrison Ford dealt with as Rick Deckard in the first one, and like identity and, you know, what it means to exist, and just all these complex themes. It's just, yeah, I was riveted by it. And like Ben said, I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, which, you know, just means that I need to see it again.
Yeah, I definitely want
to. I was just going to say, it's great to see Harrison Ford caring about a performance. You know, this is some of his best work in a long time, I think.
I was going to say, the one thing I didn't like about the movie is Jared Leto, which is a thing that seems to be common in blockbusters these days. It seemed to
me... Fun fact, they actually shot Jared Leto stuff in his real house.
I could believe that. I could definitely believe that.
Totally a joke.
Yes. But I don't know. I was just amazed at how much they got right about... just this feels like a Blade Runner sequel made today. Like, when we see Force Awakens, it feels like a Star Wars sequel, but it feels like a modernized, like, it's J.J. Abrams' take on Star Wars, right? And this felt like this could have, I mean, maybe not with these effects and looking this good, but this feels like the Blade Runner sequel they would have made after Blade Runner. Like, it really feels perfectly a sequel, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, agreed.
The last and final thing I wanted to say is I saw Thor Ragnarok at a Junket press screening. I'm covering the Junket this week. We were able to post our early reactions on the internet, which means that we could tweet out a reaction. HT wrote up a piece on the site combining all the reactions from around the web. Basically, I said that Thor Ragnarok is one of the funniest Marvel Studio movies thus far and definitely the best Thor film, which isn't hard to do. But I loved the score. I think people are going to love Kate. They're going to love Tessa Thompson. They're going to love Jeff Goldblum is unlike any character. I mean, maybe closest to the Collector in all of the Marvel movies. He's very weird and very strange. The movie does feel like a Taika Waititi film. And I think the most critical thing I can say this early on, because I can't really give a review. I can just give kind of a vague reaction. Is that the jokes and characters are front and center in this movie, and the action and drama oftentimes takes, you know, the background, and that will be a thing that people either love or that will be the thing that people hate about this movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the defining thing about this movie is if you're going to the movie to laugh, you will probably enjoy this film quite a bit, but if you're going to the movie for a Marvel action film, you might have some issues. Who knows?
Cool.
Yeah. But you can read on the site. HT has a roundup of all the people who saw it and tweeted about it, and I don't think there's a single negative thing that anybody has said on the web about this thus far. So I think it is a movie to watch. I mean, they're screening it over a month early, which Disney doesn't need to do. So, I mean, they believe in it. Anyways, let's move on to our next news item. Bill and Ted 3 has gotten a working title. Ben, what do we know?
Yes, so Keanu Reeves has been talking about making Bill and Ted 3 for almost 10 years. And there have been a bunch of, you know, incremental moves forward for this film. But he talked about the movie at New York Comic Con this past weekend and said that the movie actually has a real title now. And the title is Bill and Ted Face the Music. He also described a little bit about the plot. He said it's a cautionary tale. They're supposed to save the world. But when we see them, they haven't saved the world and they're married and they have kids. And they're playing to nobody, but they have to write the song and face the music. Hopefully we'll make it before I'm 60 years old. So that sort of goes along with, it aligns with what he's said about this movie in the past. I have never seen either of the first two Bill and Ted movies, so this doesn't really mean much to me. I don't really connect to it on that level, but I am looking forward to diving into those movies because I read the plot synopsis for Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and it sounds absolutely bonkers, off the wall, insane. So I have made it a mission that I'm going to catch up with this franchise before the third movie comes out.
My brain can't even comprehend the fact that you have not seen these movies. Why or how did they escape you?
I don't know. It's just one of those weird things where I heard, you know, growing up, all of the catchphrases and the lingo and stuff from the films seeped into me through osmosis, but I just never sat down and watched them. I didn't see them in theaters, which I feel like a lot of kids, you know, who were my age at the time just went and saw them in theaters, and I just never managed to do that. And then I don't know, somehow never picked it up on VHS or anything. So it's just a blank spot in my movie watching fandom.
Brad, you wrote the story about Rick and Morty and this controversy that is happening with this McDonald's. What do we know?
Yeah, first of all, let's just get this out of the way. This is a ridiculous thing for people to be mad about, all things considered. Like, come on. But there's been this push for McDonald's to re-release the famous Szechuan sauce that was released as a cross-promotion with Disney's Mulan back in 1998, along with Chicken McNuggets, because in the third season premiere of Rick and Morty, Rick Sanchez reveals that all of his dealings around the galaxy and all the things he creates have basically all been in an effort for him to get back the Szechuan sauce. He hasn't been able to get it back. Even with time travel, apparently it hasn't been possible. So now, because of all the popularity around the Szechuan sauce, because of Rick and Morty, there's been discussion about bringing it back, because they gave a big bottle to Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland, and they gave a few fans the same big bottles as well. And this past weekend, they announced that they were going to be giving away limited supplies of the sauce to people who came to certain locations specifically to get the sauce, and also this series of like limited edition posters, the Szechuan sauce one being one that had art that was vaguely inspired by Rick and Morty, but not so much to breach any licensing agreements. So apparently the McDonald's locations that had the sauce were not anywhere near prepared for the volume of people that showed up. Some of these locations had hundreds of fans in line waiting to get some sauce, and some of these locations, most in fact, it sounds like, only had anywhere from 20 to 30 tiny barbecue sauce style packets of sauce to give out. So needless to say, Rick and Morty fans were upset, but McDonald's was quick to correct their mistake, because apparently they're bringing back Szechuan sauce in quite the large supply this winter. They don't say for how long it's going to be around, but they said that there'll be plenty so that everyone who wants them will be able to get some, and da-da-da-da-da. So a happy ending, you know, for anyone who loves fast food condiments brought back to life thanks to adult animated series.
I don't even remember this sauce. I mean, aside from this whole hubbub, Brad, do you remember having this sauce when Mulan was in theaters?
No, I never had the sauce. I do remember the sauce existing, because I distinctly remember that they also had a container for the chicken nuggets that looked like a traditional Chinese food container. So I remember that part of it, but I never had the sauce. I'm interested to try it just to see if it's worth all this hype. But I'll have to wait for winter now to try it.
Also in the news, the director of Pacific Rim Uprising is saying that a expanded Pacific Rim universe may be in the works. Ben, what do we know?
Yes, at New York Comic Con, Stephen S. DeKnight spoke in an interview with Nerdist and basically said that he is hoping that the new movie is going to launch a whole Pacific Rim universe that he even compares to like a Star Wars or Star Trek style franchise. So his quote was, I think you'll definitely probably get more comics. So let me stop right there. Definitely probably. That's a weird thing to say. So the plan was always to use this movie as a launching pad. If enough people show up to this, we've already talked about the plot of the third movie and how the end of the third movie would expand the universe to a Star Wars, Star Trek style franchise where you can go in many, many different directions. You can go main canon, you can go spin-offs, you can go one-offs. Yeah, that's the plan. And I would love to see an animated TV show based on this. So this seems like a lot of content for Pacific Rim. We've talked a little bit about the trailer for Pacific Rim Uprising, which sort of is a little questionable and doesn't really have the same uniqueness that the Guillermo del Toro-directed 2013 movie had. So I'm not quite sure if all of this is sort of putting the cart before the horse. That's the plan right now, is for Uprising to launch a full Pacific Rim cinematic universe. So I don't know. What do you think about this, Peter?
I mean, I'm guessing that was always their intention. When they made the first Pacific Rim, they came out with like a comic book that was, I think, written by the same screenwriter, Travis Beecham. it seems like the direction they're headed. Like we said when we talked about the trailer that the trailer kind of looks more like an adaptation of an 80s, you know, anime turned American television show than, you know, anything else. Like it looks like more like what I expected the Power Rangers movie to look like than the Power Rangers movie. So I don't know. I mean, I want to see what this Pacific Rim is like. If it's, I really liked the touches that Del Toro put on this world and his world building in that first film. This kind of, as I said the other day, I'm a little worried about. If Del Toro was involved, I would certainly be very interested. How about you, Ben?
For sure. Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat. I watched the trailer and was not super impressed with it, even though I like a lot of the people involved with the movie, especially John Boyega. But I'm just like HT. I cannot believe that they're trying to force Scott Eastwood on us like this. And I will back her to the grave with the idea that Scott Eastwood should not be our next big movie star. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, he's the next Jai Courtney, obviously. Moving on, we've been talking about this Fast and the Furious feud for quite a few episodes now, and that escalated and maybe got shut down over the weekend. Brad, you wrote the story for Slash Film. What has happened?
Yeah, it's a family feud, if you will. No, but
Brad, this we missed you.
I appreciate that. So, yeah, as we all know, this started with Tyrese Gibson, you know, whining about because Fast and Furious 9 was getting delayed in favor of a spinoff focusing on Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham's characters from the franchise. So Tyrese Gibson was going to have to wait a whole extra year to get that paycheck that keeps him going for however long. And he made a few Instagram posts calling out Dwayne Johnson and saying he was tearing the family apart and, you know, no one goes solo. And he and Chris Bridges, a.k.a. Ludacris, turned down an offer for their own spinoff, which I don't buy for a second. But anyway, this was a whole thing. And Tyrese Gibson was just so upset online and it turned into this big deal. And originally, some people thought Vin Diesel was maybe throwing his support behind Tyrese because at the end of the week, last week, he posted an image on Instagram of himself with Paul Walker and Tyrese. And all he posted as a caption was brotherhood. But then over the weekend, he made another post that also said brotherhood, but then he expanded upon with a whole full statement, basically recalling what it was like to work with Dwayne Johnson for the first time after someone recommended it on Facebook. And then he addressed the idea of all the speculation as to why Fast 9 was pushed back. And he said, but it would be unfair to say it is anyone's fault. As we plot the course to expand the Fast and Furious universe, one must be mindful to take stock of the roads we took to get here. The pillars of authenticity, family, and most importantly, our loyal fans' perspective has been instrumental in procuring success. However, like any vehicle that has run around the globe 8 times, the franchise is in need of maintenance. My good friend and godfather of Universal, Ron Meyer, has granted me time to do just that. We have some very exciting news to share soon. Stay tuned. So, Vin Diesel is basically telling everyone to chill out, especially you, Tyrese. I know you're listening. And apparently there's some work being done behind the scenes to either improve the franchise or retool it to allow for, you know, these spinoffs to exist and maybe for the main franchise to, you know, end while still keeping it alive by following characters on their own adventures. I'm not really sure what this whole maintenance thing means, but all we know right now is that Vin Diesel is on board for Fast and Furious 9 and 10. Those are supposed to be the last two movies as far as the primary franchise is concerned. And I'm sure now Universal is looking for ways to keep that franchise alive because it's such a big cash cow and international success that they need to keep it going somehow. It remains to be seen if, you know, spinning off these characters in their own movies will be just as lucrative or exciting for fans. Personally, I think Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham's characters were the best part of The Fate of the Furious, which otherwise I felt was like a disappointing sequel. So I'm down to see what happens with those two guys. And, you know, yeah, I guess that's where we're at now.
I don't even understand this feud. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, is the feud that they're making the movie later because of this spinoff movie? Like, why are they so angry? Do they not want the movie being made at all?
I think that's part of it. It sounds to me like Tyrese is probably upset that they're making a movie without the entire ensemble. He thinks that it should only be an ensemble affair. And I'm sure that he's annoyed that he has to wait, you know, to have another decent paying job. So it is what it is.
Ben, you're a resident Fast and Furious fan. What do you think of all this?
I think it's a good move. I think, like Brad, I was also a little disappointed with the fate of the Furious. And I think anything that will give Chris Morgan, the writer, producer of the franchise, more time to, craft a better sequel and really, they're coming in for the landing here. They're coming in on Fast 9 and Fast 10, and that's supposed to be the last two major movies. So I really want them to stick the landing on this. And I think if they think that they need more time, I mean, the timing of this franchise, that's a big part of the reason that Justin Lin left after directing so many movies, is because Universal wanted the sequel to come out like a year after the previous movie did. And he was just like, guys, I know this franchise. I don't think it can be done in that amount of time. Like, I need a little bit more time to, you know, craft everything. And like, these are big, huge, mega movies. You can't just throw a release date on it and hope that everything is going to be okay. So I think, the idea of pressing pause on this thing and doing the spinoff in the meantime is going to be a good move for the franchise as a whole. So I hope that's what ends up happening.
Well said. Ben, last week you were at Beyond Fest and you attended a Q&A with Arnold Schwarzenegger, who had a bunch of stories, but one of them is making the viral rounds with Sylvester Stallone. Tell us about it.
Yes. Schwarzenegger gave one of the best Q&As I've seen in many, many years. He was super entertaining. He was there for a double feature of Predator and The Running Man, both of which are celebrating their 30th anniversaries this year. So yeah, you can read my whole write-up on that because there's a bunch of good stuff in there. But the one thing that I wanted to mention was Schwarzenegger basically confirmed one of Hollywood's all-time great troll moves, which was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this movie from 1992 called Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
Super, super terrible. It's Stallone playing like an action movie cop, and his mom is played by Estelle Getty, and she witnesses a murder, and it's basically like this buddy comedy kind of thing with him and his aging mother, and she, you know, takes down bad guys. It's really, really bad. So I asked Schwarzenegger in this Q&A, about these rumors that I'd heard, that because the legend has it that Schwarzenegger read this script and he knew that he was in this huge rivalry with Sylvester Stallone in the 80s and 90s of, you know, these guys were just fighting for box office supremacy. They were battling over pretty much everything. They hated each other at this time. And Schwarzenegger read this script for Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, thought it was awful, but decided to purposefully leak to the press that he was really interested in making it, so Stallone and his people would try to, you know, swoop in and grab it from out from under him. And I asked him if it was true or if it was just, you know, an apocryphal story that's been blown out of proportion, and he said it was true, and he explained this whole thing, and you can read his full response there. But he basically was like, this movie was bad. I've done some bad movies, but this was really, really bad. And he confirmed the whole plan was like this massive orchestrated thing that he sort of cooked up to basically screw Stallone over in the long run. And those guys are really good friends now. But I just thought that was an amazing, Schwarzenegger is one of those guys, say what you will about him, but he definitely knows how Hollywood works, and he basically owns Stallone in the best possible way right there.
See, now I want to see someone actually get Stallone's comment on that, because I wonder what he'd have to say about that.
I was looking up to see if Stallone had said anything about it. And I think on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, he sort of confirmed it. I don't think he mentioned that it was that movie, but he sort of, like, he told a version of the story, but it made him look like not as much of a fool as this Schwarzenegger story did, obviously. But so I think it, you know, Stallone's not going to deny it, but Schwarzenegger, just the way that he told the story was super entertaining. And I quoted him right there. He was like, you know, pumping his fist in the air. He was so excited about remembering this story and how bad he owned Stallone at that time.
The movie blogosphere, the movie industry has been rocked in the last few months, actually last year, with sexual harassment and sexual assault claims. We've talked about it on the podcast in the past. We've talked about it on the site this past week. Some allegations came out against Weinstein Company head Harvey Weinstein and Screen Junkies, one of the creator of Screen Junkies and Honest Trailers, Andy Signor, and both have met their demise. Both have been fired. Brad, what do we know?
Yeah, so Harvey Weinstein, obviously of the Weinstein Company and Miramax and Dimension Films, had a huge New York Times story reported on him featuring accounts from 8 women who had reportedly been sexually harassed by Weinstein, among them including actress Ashley Judd, who actually had previously talked about the incident but just didn't name Harvey Weinstein himself. And a lot of the fear, you know, from these women not coming forward comes from who Harvey is and how he could impact careers, and he's this giant in Hollywood. And he just did these terribly disgusting, despicable things to, you know, manipulate and harass women for his own, you know, sick sexual pleasure. And now he's been fired from the Weinstein Company after the board met and decided that they needed to let him go. I don't know why it took them 3 days to let him go, because it seems like it's a pretty cut and dry decision, being like, yeah, you're disgusting. Get out of here, Harvey.
Well, the reason why it took so long is the, you know, one of the board members is Bob Weinstein, Harvey's brother. So now the head of the Weinstein Company is his brother and his enabler, Bob Weinstein.
Yeah. So it's just it's a complete clusterfuck all around. I feel like this could end up being the end of the Weinstein Company, which wouldn't be such a bad thing. You know, they've put forth some, you know, best picture heavy hitters and that kind of thing, but they've also, you know, ruined several movies as well. And if this is going to be, you know, the kind of people that we're talking about, you know, running this company, then we just don't need them, especially with all of the, you know, other sexual harassment allegations coming forth. Like, these are exactly the kind of people that we need to start weeding out of Hollywood and making sure that they don't have anything to do with the stuff we love, so that they can't hurt any more women and ruin any more lives. It's just, it's ridiculous.
For sure. Yeah,
for sure.
And tell us about Andy Signor. There's been an investigation that resulted in him getting fired.
I have several different women coming forth and putting forth these narratives. You know, these are people who worked with Andy too at Screen Junkies. And the fact that, you know, this is coming to light now and in more abundant numbers, you know, there's nothing to do except believe these people and react to it. And let somebody
go. The most disturbing part is he has a wife and kids. That's something I didn't know until much later. It's crazy. It's sad that this is that, you know, this has been going on. And I appreciate that all these women are coming out and speaking up, and that, you know, it is causing change in our, not just our industry, but the film industry as a whole.
Yeah, I definitely think that we need to do whatever we can to support these people, because it's a tough thing to come forward and you know, put yourself on the line. And that's why a lot of people, you know, the Harvey Weinstein thing was like an open secret in Hollywood for years and years, and nobody was willing to say anything. But I feel like the dominoes are really starting to fall right now culturally, where this kind of bullshit is no longer, you know, acceptable stuff, regardless of who you are. So I hope that there are a lot of people out there in Hollywood who have done this kind of stuff to women and those that, who, you know, they've held power over for a long time. I hope there are a lot of people that are running scared right now, that are worried about their careers. And I hope that they get taken down too, because this is something that has been an industry-wide problem for almost as long as Hollywood has existed and movie making has been a thing. And
there's been jokes for decades, a century of the casting couch and that whole thing. And the sad fact of the matter is that's, you know, there is something behind that. And, you know, there's actresses out there that have claimed that they've been raped in those situations, not just sexually assaulted, but raped. And I'm glad that this is, the dominoes are falling now and they're continuing to fall. This isn't the end of it. And I'm sure that we'll hear more about this, and we'll talk about it when it happens here in the podcast.
it's seriously the easiest thing to do to not be a piece of garbage and to not do things to women that you are not given consent or permission to do, and like to not force yourself upon them, or it's just seriously, don't be a piece of garbage. That's it.
Yeah, well said. Okay, so we can find more of all these stories on slashfilm.com. You can find Brad at Ethan_Anderton on Twitter and the Go Flix Yourself podcast and on iTunes. You can find Ben at Ben Pears on Twitter. You can find me at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please go rate and review us. Tell your friends. Subscribe. A Star Wars trailer is coming out after we record this, and we might do an emergency episode to talk about it. I'm not sure if that's going to be tonight or tomorrow morning, but look out for that. And thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.